Members, we will get this hearing of the House Commerce Committee going here. We will call the meeting to order. We're slightly short of a quorum, but Representative Cornish, we'll have you come up first, and we'll start with your bill, and we'll ask you to talk slowly as members dribble in from other committee assignments. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Representative Cornish, we are one member short of a quorum, so I won't officially move your bill, but we'll let you go ahead and start explaining the bill, and we will get the others caught up as they come in.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, House File 1209, which I'm hoping is headed to the floor.
State Government Finance, then the floor.
Really?
That's what they tell us.
With the three more committees than we did, we passed the same bill last year. All right, well, House File 1209 simply is a bill that if you are a veteran and you go into a veterans service vendor, somewhere where you would get services for veterans benefits, if those services were available at your veterans service office, this vendor would have to tell you that. You would be able to discover that you could get these services for free at your veterans service office. It basically, that's the bill. So if you go in for services, that organization has to tell you, sorry, but you could get this for free if you want. They would still have the option of taking it from that person, but at least they would be notified. And with me is, I'll go first with Tom McLaughlin, if you would, the head of the government, or the Commander's Task Force. I'll let you introduce yourself.
Mr. McLaughlin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. I'm Tom McLaughlin. I'm from Mankato, and I am the legislative chairman for the Veterans of Foreign Wars Department of Minnesota. And we sit on what's called the Commander's Task Force, which is the service clubs in Minnesota. That one of the things we do is we come up with legislative priority goals for veterans legislation in the state. And the last 2 years, the disclosure bill has been on there, unanimously agreed by all the members of the Commander's Task Force, and Representative Cornish carried it, and we're back with it again this year. As the representative said, it's a pretty straightforward bill. There's no expense or anything involved in it, but what it does basically is inform veterans of the County Veterans Service Office service that we have in every county in the state of Minnesota. We aren't unique in the nation, but some states do not have this service available at the local level, so we appreciate it. We think we're lucky to have it for our membership, and they do a really good job. Sometimes a veteran will have a claim filed or have an appeal filed on a denial, and they hire outside counsel or outside services, which is fine. This bill is not to prohibit them from doing that, but it does inform the veteran, they would be informed under this bill that the services they are requesting are available free through their local county veterans service office. And that not only keeps the money with the veteran, but it keeps it in our community. So with that, I'll give up the mic to our next testifier.
Thank you, Mr. McLaughlin. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
It should be pretty easy. Mike McLaughlin, so I keep that pretty uniform.
Got
uniformity.
It.
Thank you, Chair, and the members for giving me a moment of your time. I'm the Blue Earth County Veteran Service Officer. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. It's for all 87 counties. Also a Iraq Marine Corps veteran, too, as well. So from my standpoint, from my office, and then for our association, as we're all in support of this bill, I think, as Tom McLaughlin stated, that this isn't so much a other services bill. It's more of a public awareness for the veteran community, especially for some of those younger veterans who may not be aware of the services that are offered for free, or maybe some of the vets who have been back for a while and never engaged in those services. I believe Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs is in support of this bill, and so is the governor, too. So really, from top to bottom, I think it's just a really good way to increase awareness to our veterans of the services that are out there for them and help keep the benefits where they belong, and that's with the veteran and not with others. So,
Mr. McLaughlin, thank you for your service. Mr. McLaughlin, thank you also for your service. Representative Anderson had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if Mr. Johnson's going to come forward from the Department of Veteran Affairs. I'd like to know, I assume that there's not going to be a cost that they're going to be. Correct. Okay, we're good. That's
okay.
It.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Good question. Members, any other questions? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Cornish, I've asked this question before, and I'm going to ask it again. So where's the list of covered services going to be so that people know when they give the notification which services they have to tell folks that they can get for free?
The Veteran Service
Office? Yeah. Doing the shuffle.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Representative Hillstrom, to your question, the county veteran service officers have a website that includes a directory for all county veteran service officers. There is not a comprehensive list of benefits, though there is a lot of overlap between the federal VA, the claims department at the Whipple Building in St. Paul, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, as well as the Veteran Service Organizations and County Veteran Service Officers. So.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm very supportive of the proposal, but what I don't want to have happen is I don't want the notification to just say this may be a covered service and then have the people say, well, I don't want to take the effort to go find out if it is. I'd rather have us know where to go to look at what's covered so people actually know they can get it for free.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, one thing that we do try and avoid is forcing these for-profit providers to advertise for us. What we're trying to do is make sure that folks know that they should contact their county veteran service officer, and they would identify maybe that nonprofit organization's website or something like that. But We're not trying to negatively impact these for-profit providers. We're simply trying to encourage the understanding that each county has one, and that there's a sort of a generic MACVSO website that has a directory. So, but we would be happy to develop the right policies to make sure that happens.
Any other questions, members? Is there anyone else in the audience who wants to speak for or against this bill? And Mr. McLaughlin, as you're coming back down, if you could come back down just for a minute. I understand that in addition to having served in Vietnam, today is also a special day for you. Is today, in fact, your 70th birthday?
Yes, the median age for Vietnam veterans is now 70.
Well, congratulations and happy birthday from the House Commerce Committee.
Thank you so much.
I'm sure it will be that way for every bill we hear today. With that, Representative Cornish, we do now have a quorum. I will move House File 1209 so it is officially in front of us. And with that, Representative Cornish, we'll give you the final word.
Just thank you, the chair and members, and I know you've got a busy schedule, so I'll keep it short and ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Thank you to both Mr. McLaughlin's and Mr. Johnson. We appreciate it. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1209 be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, gentlemen. Happy birthday, sir. I hope this isn't the highlight. Go have fun. With that, Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes from March 8th.
Thank you, Representative Fenton. I appreciate you being on top of that. Members, any questions or comments about the minutes from our last meeting? Seeing none, those in favor of the Fenton motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you very much, members, the both of you that voted, and Representative Fenton for doing that. Appreciate it. With that, Representative Keel, I will move House File 1832 so it is before the committee. And with that, Representative Keel, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1832 is, in 2010, the legislature passed an Oral Chemotherapy Parity Act with bipartisan support. The act equalized the cost of the consumer to the consumer of intravenous and oral chemotherapy. I'm stuttering. Sorry about that. Limiting the out-of-pocket cost to consumers. And with that, I will have my testifier.
That sounds good. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ellie Beaver. I'm the Government Relations Director here in Minnesota for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. Thank you to Representative Keel for carrying this bill. This bill would be a fix to the legislation that we passed in 2010 around oral chemotherapy parity. We passed this bill because access to oral chemotherapy medications are important to make sure patients are receiving the care they need when they need it. Oral chemotherapy offers advantages like less frequent visits to a doctor's office or cancer treatment center, less need to schedule long appointments for infusions, and less worry about finding transportation to and from appointments. And this flexibility is particularly important to people living in rural areas who otherwise would have to travel long distances to the nearest treatment center, as well as for employed patients and family members who are trying to reduce hours away from work during their treatment. This bill seeks to make sure that health plans are complying with the law that we passed in 2010 and ask them to indicate their level of coverage for oral chemotherapy medications so that the Department of Commerce can ensure that oral chemotherapy medications are being tiered appropriately. All the stakeholders, including Commerce and the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, have reviewed this language and have no objections to it. So I urge you to pass House File 1832. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Beaver. Members, any questions? Not seeing any. Is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? Not seeing any either. Representative Keel will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a good bill. Please pass it.
Those are good final words. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1832 be re-referred to the General Register. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Keel. Representative Drazkowski. I will move House File 2026 so that it is in front of the committee. Author's amendment. Representative Drazkowski, we have an author's amendment, but as it's sort of a substantive an amendment, do you want to run through that with us before we adopt it?
I will, Mr. Chair. This amendment...
And this is, for the record, this is the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment... provides that individuals that do not that have direct primary care agreements with doctors will not be required to fall under definition of insurance, so that they can operate in that contract without any of the shackles of state mandates affecting their ability to operate in that contractual agreement.
Members, any questions to that amendment? Not seeing any, we will vote on the A1 amendment. Those in favor of the adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Drazkowski to House File 2026 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2026 attempts to begin to reform our broken health insurance system here in Minnesota. We hear again and again calls from people for options to buy more affordable and more accessible insurance policies, ones that are customized to meet their need, rather than the full-size, shiny, glossy, gold-plated Cadillacs that we have for coverage that are mandated in federal and state law. So what this allows is for individuals, as long as the potential insurer offers to them the full complement of state and federal mandated benefit coverages. As long as those are offered by that particular insurer, the individual would have the ability to exercise something that would be different from that, either slightly different or maybe more. So this I've called it, Mr. Chair and members, a freedom to choose customized insurance. I think that defines it pretty well and really gives us a chance to give our health insurance market the ability to develop further, to offer those options, the freedom in which both the insurers and the insureds or potential insureds in Minnesota have been clamoring for, and this would offer them that flexibility and the associated cost savings for those particular situations. So encourage your support for the bill and the amendment.
Representative Drazkowski, thank you. I think we'll jump right into the people that want to speak in favor or be opposed to the bill. Mr. Brickwitty, you're first on the list. Mr. Brickwitty, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Peter Brickwitty from the Department of Commerce. Mr. Chairman, we do have significant concerns with House File 2026 as drafted. I'm just looking at the amendment for the first time, so I will restrict my comments to the bill as introduced. We are concerned, Mr. Chairman, that House File 2026 as drafted violates federal law, which prohibits the state from, or the state is preempted from allowing sales that of products that are required by law to have the federally defined essential health benefits set. I would further add that plans are not allowed to sell products with an actuarial value that would rate them below the catastrophic level. So I think plans would be still restricted in terms of what they could put together under this proposal with regard to what benefits, mandated benefits at the state level, they would not be able to include. Insurers are already allowed under Chapter 62Q to sell flexible benefit plans, which can allow for some customization. I would note that since the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, we have not received any new plans at the department under the flexible benefits plans law, and only one company prior to ACA implementation really found any success in that market. Members, I'd be happy to stand for questions. I would close to say that even if federal law did permit the sale of these products without mandated benefits, I think consumers would be at their own peril to look at them. I understand Representative Drazkowski's point about at least providing the option to consumers, but insurance rarely works where you anticipate all of your full health benefit needs prior to you needing insurance. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I leave it there. Happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brickwitty. I think we'll keep going with testifiers. Ms. Abderholden. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Abderholden. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. NAMI Minnesota opposes this bill. We already struggle with having coverage for mental health treatment under private plans. I'd remind members that prior to the Affordable Care Act, plans offered on the market did not have to cover all mental health or substance use disorder treatment, and individual and small group plans didn't have to follow mental health parity. Many people really thought that they had bought insurance to cover major medical issues, only to discover that it didn't cover mental health treatment. Many families, including mine, racked up huge medical bills to pay for mental health treatment. A 2007 study found that when looking at bankruptcies due to medical expenses, the most common diagnoses were multiple sclerosis, followed by diabetes, injuries, stroke, mental illnesses, and heart disease. For people with pulmonary, cardiac, or psychiatric illnesses, prescription drugs were the largest expense. And most of these medical debtors were actually well-educated and middle-class, and three-quarters had health insurance. One in five people will develop a mental illness in any given year. It's that common. And if your insurance doesn't cover mental health treatment, not only will there be poor outcomes for the individual, but we as a society pay one way or another in uncompensated care, more people going on to Medicaid, people ending up in our criminal justice system, and the list goes on. Untreated mental illnesses results in 27 lost work days and $17 billion in lost productivity for businesses. Being asked to sign a statement that you were offered a plan with all the mandates and you declined is frankly not enough. All the conditions that are not covered really should be listed, because it's really difficult to dig through and find out what is not covered. I want to kind of remind people, I've been around here a very long time, that the reason for most of these mandates is that someone along the way found out that their treatment wasn't covered and had huge losses both personally and to their families. I think when, for me in particular, we're really tired of hearing complaints that people with mental illness are in our jails or they're homeless, and yet we can't guarantee that they can access and stay on their medications at work, and we can't ensure that their health plan covers their very treatment. We have not built a mental health system because of the discrimination, frankly, under private and public insurance. The bottom line here is the fundamental problem that we can't prevent every illness. We don't have the freedom to choose our own illnesses, and we don't know which ones that we or our family members will get. And we think it's a particularly bad idea to allow plans not to cover mental health treatment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Mary Greenke. Ms. Greenke, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Krinke. I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association, representing 142 hospitals and health systems across the state. MHA is also opposed to House File 2026 and would allow for the sale and purchase of a health insurance policy without any regards to the policy having a mandated benefit set. We recognize that Minnesota has historically had a more generous benefit set than many other states in the country. However, this benefit set, exactly as Ms. Abderholden has said, developed over time with thoughtful input from legislators, healthcare stakeholder groups, and most importantly, consumers. If Minnesota policymakers seek to reduce or eliminate healthcare benefits, this should not be done with an across-the-board action, but only after careful and close review of each of these individual benefits. The Minnesota Hospital Association believes it is premature to allow catastrophic-only plans to be sold in Minnesota until we are clear on what the ACA replacement legislation looks like and whether there will be a mandated benefit set in the federal legislation. Minnesota hospitals and health systems have been very supportive over the years of an inclusive benefit set that encourages prevention, screenings, mental health and chemical dependency treatment, primary care, as well as hospitalization. These benefits encourage health and reduce reliance on emergency rooms as being our point of access where people often get their care. So-called skinny plans, as they are sometimes referred to, will increase uncompensated care for hospitals and certainly increase out-of-pocket costs for the consumers. I would like to just share one example from our hospital data that I think brings home the point that Ms. Abderholden was referring to. I got information today on the population between the ages of 21 and 30. This is often referred to as the young invincibles who want to purchase these so-called catastrophic-only plans. And we looked at two categories. We looked at mental health and compared it to trauma. So for that age group, age 21 to 30, over a course of a year, we had 409 hospital admissions statewide for trauma, and that represented about $40 million in claims. For that same age category for mental health, we had 11,800 inpatient hospital admissions for charges of $348 million. So let me just kind of put this in comparison. These so-called catastrophic plans that these young people will purchase is for about 409 admissions, but mental health was over 11,000 admissions. So this notion that having a catastrophic plan will cover you is just simply not the case. And a lot of our young people don't know, families don't know, we don't know where mental health issues will strike. So a skinny plan just simply will not work. Young adults need more than just a catastrophic health plan. We urge legislators at best to keep the health care benefits as they are today. If in the future, if changes need to be made, it should be done slowly and carefully after consideration of the costs and benefits and not with a blanket elimination of our current benefit set. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Krinke. Up next is Ms. Laura Sales from the Nurses Association.
Good
welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. I'm not Laura Sales. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kava Zabawa, and I'm a retired maternal child health nurse and member of the Minnesota Nurses Association. I wanted to be with you here today to share my concerns about House File 2026, which would allow Blue Cross, Medica, and other health plans to offer health insurance options that do not cover services that are vital to patients throughout their lives. I worked under those conditions, and I believe, and believe me, we don't want to go back to those times. How could anyone know the health care that they will need? And many mothers plan their pregnancies, but not everyone does. I often saw young pregnant women who purchased their plans through Boynton Health Services at the University of Minnesota back in the day, which did not include maternity benefits. Because they didn't have coverage, they would leave the hospital as soon as they could after their deliveries, so they weren't billed for another day. This bill would force new mothers, if they didn't purchase a special maternity health plan, out of the hospital without adequate recovery time and without important educational instruction from their nurses. For anyone on the committee who has experienced these crucial and critical hours and days after delivering a baby, this is when mothers learn how to nurse their babies and the baby learns to feed. Parents and family learn how to care for their baby and what to expect in the first days and weeks of their child's life. We have already reduced hospital stays drastically to 48 hours for new mothers, and that time is critical to prevent problems in the future. The bill would allow Blue Cross and Medica and now United Health Group to remove maternal, newborn, and children's health services and even prenatal services, which are well known to promote the health of the mother and baby and prevent problems from occurring. This is unconscionable to remove these services. Other services such as mental health, outpatient medical treatment and surgery, congenital diseases, cancer diagnosis, diabetes, dental care, OBGYN services, home care nursing, emergency services, and even cancer treatments and chemotherapy would be affected by this bill. The list goes on. Mr. Chair and members, as caregivers, we believe that people deserve affordable health care during their whole life continuum, from birth to death. We cannot support a proposal that would strip benefit coverage from people when they need it most. People don't choose their disease or a condition. Please side with our patients and vote no on House File 2026. Thank you very much.
Well, you might not have been Ms. Saylor, but you did a very nice job testifying. Thank you.
That was my first time.
We would never have known. You did great. Thank you. And last, Ms. Beaver, if you want to come back and speak on this bill as well. You're also welcome to stay and testify on the next bill if you want. If you're here, might as well. Ms. Beaver, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Chair and members of the committee, so the bill I just talked about, the Oral Chemotherapy Parity Act, is one of the mandates that would be affected by this bill. I wanted to say that not everyone who purchases a health plan in Minnesota has cancer, but everyone is at risk of developing cancer. Cancer affects 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women in their lifetime. No one expects to get cancer, but in 2017, an estimated 30,000 Minnesotans will be diagnosed with cancer. If this bill passes, Minnesotans could pay for a health plan that excludes coverage for cancer screenings like mammography, pap tests, and colonoscopies. They could be denied affordable access to diagnostic services such as MRI, ultrasounds, and biopsies. And they could face significant out-of-pocket costs for cancer treatment therapies, such as reconstructive surgery after breast mastectomy and oral chemotherapy medications like I spoke about earlier, resulting in them delaying or foregoing the care altogether. Screening for cancer helps detect it early when treatment is less expensive and chances for survival are highest. And in the case of colonoscopy, preventing cancer from developing through the detection and removal of precancerous polyps. If someone purchases a plan without cancer screening coverage because they don't think they need it, They are less likely to get screened and more likely to be diagnosed with cancer at a later stage. If someone purchases a plan that doesn't cover oral chemotherapy medications, they might be diagnosed with cancer and discover the best course of treatment for their disease is an oral chemotherapy drug that will cost them thousands of dollars out of pocket a month. They may have to make a choice between their life and their life savings. Allowing health plans to offer and consumers to purchase products that don't include a comprehensive benefit package, including preventative services like cancer screenings, puts all Minnesotans at risk. Please oppose House File 2026 and make sure Minnesotans have access to the life-saving care they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beaver. That's everybody we had on the list that signed up ahead of time to testify. Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grasskauser.
I think we got a couple of testifiers for the bill.
Okay. We didn't have anybody else that let us know they were going to testify, but if there's anybody else that wants to speak for or against the bill, come on down. We just got that, Representative Grasskauser. Ms. Braze, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Twyla Braze. I'm president and founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. And I do, our organization does support this bill. We support the freedom to make personal choices in both insurance and medical treatment decisions. This allows health plans to offer coverage that includes none, part, or all state and federal mandated benefits and gives individuals a choice of which they want. It's public knowledge that Minnesotans are experiencing unaffordable premiums. Insurance mandates increase the cost of every health insurance policy, and mandates have grown rapidly. In 1965, there were only 7 state mandated benefits nationwide. In 1978, there were 343. 11 years later, in 1989, there were 730. By 1997, nearly 1,000, and today more than 2,200 mandated benefits nationwide. In Minnesota, in September of 2009, we had 35 state mandated benefits, and now, according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, we have 61 state mandated benefits. In 1997, a Milliman and Robertson study of just 12 of the most common mandates found that they would increase the cost of a family policy by 15% to 30%. In 1989, when there were only 730 mandates nationwide, a study by a professor of economics and a research director at the Health Insurance Association of America, the study was called The Price of State Mandated Benefits, and they wrote that they found three things. That mandates raised the price of health insurance substantially, that nearly one of every 6 small firms that do not offer health insurance would offer health insurance in an essentially mandate-free environment, and that about one half of the large firms that are converting to self-insurance would not convert if there were not mandates. It's easier, as you probably know, for large firms to self-insure under ERISA. A June 2015 study by the Mercatus Center at George Mason University found that each state health benefit mandate leads to about 3,000 fewer small firms, for instance, those with 15 workers each, but about 20 more large firms with 1,000 or more workers. Now, why might this make a difference? As Mercatus notes, the impact on job creation is significant because new small firms were the primary creators of new jobs. Furthermore, Mercatus notes that insurers pass at least part of the cost of more comprehensive coverage on to consumers, effectively forcing them to pay for coverage that they must prefer, that they might prefer to decline. Representative Grasskauser's bill gives individuals a choice between full mandates, mandate-free insurance, or something in the middle. They can make a fully informed choice, and they'll sign a form saying so. So in conclusion, we support this bill to give consumers the option of insurance that is more affordable to them and meets their personal needs rather than a list of costly state and federal mandates. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Brace. Representative Grasskauser, is there anybody else that you know that wanted to testify in favor? And I can ask, is there anyone in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Seeing none, Representative Grasskauser, we will go to questions. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Drozdowski. So based on the testimony that I was hearing, I wasn't clear whether the purchaser of the insurance would get to decide which items were included, and that all insurance companies had to provide all services for the person to purchase, or does the insurance company get to decide which menu of services they're going to provide and people only go to that company that is providing the menu of services they're interested in?
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure I completely understood the question, Representative Hillstrom, but the way I read the bill, the insurance company needs to offer the full set of mandated coverages, and then if the individual decides to buy something less than that, that is their call as an individual, because the individual is the one that forms out the contract with the individual insurance company. There's no, there's nothing compelling any individual to enter into that contract at that point. It's up to the individual to close that contract. So it's individual's decision.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Draskowski, I had my children before the mandate for 48 hours of care for maternity coverage was included in the law. And frankly, when I had my first child, I was discharged from the hospital prior to 48 hours, and my daughter was jaundiced and all sorts of other issues that we learned about after being discharged. So you can imagine I have some concerns related to coverage of babies. But I'm particularly concerned about 62A042, family coverage requirements for newborn babies and infants. You know, many people plan on expanding their families or growing their families, but many people don't. And sometimes grandmas and grandpas end up caring for newborn babies when they hadn't planned on it. Sometimes that's a result of a tragedy in the family, and other times that's a result of some unforeseen circumstances. Under Minnesota Statute 62A.042, right now it's required that there be family coverage for newborn babies. And that covers newborn babies from the moment they're born, whether they're in the care of their parents or if the grandparents have the responsibility for financially for that child dependent. So my question is, in the event that a grandparent now was not anticipating that they were going to be financially responsible for a newborn baby, who would be responsible for providing the financial care for that child that now is in the care of the grandparent if they did not purchase that coverage? Because under current law, the insurance family coverage would cover it.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, I'm not real sure about your question or the answer to it, but I know under my proposal, Representative Hillstrom, you would no longer be required to buy prostate coverage, and grandparents or single males wouldn't be required to buy newborn coverage. So that's kind of what we're looking at here. We're looking at the ability for individuals to choose instead of government forcing a mandate upon them. And we find that when individuals choose, they will choose their future to the best of their, in their best interest. Instead, we have an all-knowing government here that forces that onto them and has created this prescriptive, unaffordable, and failing health insurance system that we have here in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Draskowski, I believe that if the individual doesn't cover the insurance for the newborn baby, it's actually the state who's going to pay the bill. So my question to you is, are individuals going to pay for the insurance to cover these babies, and these babies' costs going to be paid for, or is the taxpayer going to pay the bill for these babies that have no insurance that are now in the care of the grandparents? Because that's kind of the choice that in this situation that I'm giving you, Representative Draskowski. And what you're saying individuals should get to pick, and if, God forbid, you should end up being the primary caregiver of a newborn baby that you did not plan as a grandparent, you're saying that insurance companies no longer have to cover those services. And I'm saying to you that ultimately I think taxpayers would. So, Representative Draskowski, I think you've got some significant problems with your bill. This is just one of them. I could go on statute by statute, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom, we know. Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hellstrom for the hypothetical. And we can sit around and develop hypothetical about different situations for people because all people are different in Minnesota. And that's the cool thing about this approach, is it allows different people to have the flexibility to determine their future around their health insurance and their particular interests. And Representative Hellstrom, I don't know if you have that hypothetical in mind when you voted for flex benefit plans twice in the last 10 years. Even when the DFL was in control by almost unanimous vote in the House. So I wonder if you were thinking about that then, Representative Hellstrom. Apparently it didn't bother you at that point.
Representative Hellstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski. I am not certain which proposal you are specifically talking about and whether it was part of a larger bill or not. You take a lot of votes in 17 years in the legislature, Representative Drazkowski, and I am confident that there might even be a tax bill or a tax or two that you voted for that you might not have been happy about.
Oh, folks, this is getting good.
So,
he didn't mean to.
Representative Drazkowski.
I guess you didn't mean to, Representative Hellstrom, did you?
Representative Drazkowski, again, like I said, I don't remember that, but right now I have a proposal before me that right now is going to say that if you, as a parent, right, I have adult children right now, right, I have adult children, and someday I hope I'm a grandparent. I hope that they're able to care for their infant babies while I'm a grandparent. However, right now in the statute it says that in the event they can't, my family coverage would cover that newborn baby if I'm financially responsible for that baby. And members, tragedies do happen in this state. And if you don't plan for them and require there to be insurance that covers them, many instances taxpayers end up paying the bill. And every single person around this table believes that babies are important, and we hear about it all the time, and we vote on all sorts of issues related to babies, especially newborn babies. Representative Drazkowski. And so I think you've got a number of provisions in this bill that would make it so that the taxpayers are going to pay more just on issues that we agree on. If you then take addiction services, we as a state find that we pay for many proposals and many treatments of people that end up in the criminal justice system as in relationship to their addiction. We pay for those. Now, we've seen for the first time in a long time that many of those services have been covered based on insurance practices that have happened in the last few years. In the event we go back so that it's not covered again, who's going to pay for that? We are. That's what happens. We, the taxpayers, pay for it, and we pay for it one of two ways. We either pay for it so folks can get the treatment that they need when they're outside in community-based services, or when we end up sending folks to prison, we end up paying in a more confined setting. So one way or another, we, the taxpayers, are going to pay. So Representative Drazkowski, I prefer a system where people buy insurance and things are actually covered and taxpayers don't pay versus the system you're proposing where people don't buy insurance and the taxpayers pay.
Representative Drazkowski, you want to respond to that?
Not really. Let's go to the next question, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Hellstrom went in a circular motion there. But
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My chair is so low that I've got my chin on the table here, and it was hard to reach the microphone.
Representative Slocum, it took me a little while to get those chairs arranged today.
I think probably it did. Your cruelty knows no bounds, Mr. Chair. Anyway, you know, I was looking in my packet of stuff, Representative, and I looked at a letter here that was in my packet from the Minnesota Academy of Audiology, and it really kind of took me back to a different time, if you will. And this is about hearing aids, basically, for kids under 18. I have a personal experience with this that I just want to share because I find, I mean, they're opposed to your bill, but which is not surprising if you people who are under 18 can't get a hearing aid. But I want to tell you a little story that I lived through with this very item. I used to work in the early 70s at a residential treatment center in where we are now, St. Paul. For the Wilder Foundation. And I worked with this 8-year-old boy, and cute as a button, sweet as can be, inappropriate affect. He would laugh at things that nobody else was laughing at. He would say things that were just off the grid. And so the greater minds there were treating him for schizophrenia, early onset schizophrenia. And fortunately, I pushed and his social worker pushed, and we got him his hearing tested, and he couldn't hear. So, of course, his language was a little garbled. He was off the grid, and his affect was inappropriate. Once he got a hearing aid, he was fine. And I find this cruel. This poor kid was diagnosed early onset schizophrenia and was actually medicated for some of this too, so was taking some pretty powerful drugs. He couldn't hear. Simple problem, easily solved, but not if you can't get hearing aids, which if you're 18 years of age or younger, according to the letter from the Minnesota Academy of Audiology, you wouldn't be able to do. So I'm amazed, because I always thought you had a nice side. I did. And this, I don't like this bill at all. And for that reason, I would like to move the bill to Health and Human Services Finance.
So, Representative Slocum, you'd like to change my motion to move it to HHS Finance. I think that's what the motion was, or we went to reform. Well, Representative Drazkowski, are you okay if we send this to HHS Finance?
I'm fine with it, Mr. Chair.
Then
wherever anybody wants to hear.
Then Representative Drazkowski and members, Representative Slocum, we'll send it to HHS. I'll change the motion. We'll send it to HHS Finance. Thank you, Representative Slocum.
Okay.
Representative, who was next? Pinto.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Drazkowski.
If I could, and thank you, Representative Slocum, but under this bill, Representative Slocum, everybody will still be able to buy hearing aids. They'll still be able to buy insurance for hearing aids, but it won't require somebody who will never have kids in the first place. So in order to have the condition where you've got concern about young kids having hearing aids, you first have to have kids. Many people don't have kids or will no longer again have young kids. So what that allows is for those individuals to not be forced into buying insurance to buy coverage for something they will never have. That's what the bill does.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Drazkowski, who's the chair of my first committee, very gracious, and so I'd like to give that honorific bill. I still think it's a horrible bill.
Is that the good side?
That's the good side, Representative Drazkowski. So first things, you've heard of this as the coverage Minnesotans have is gold-plated Cadillac coverage, and I want to make sure just that we're very clear that we're talking about is coverage for maternity benefits, prenatal services, alcoholism treatment, chemotherapy for cancer, or Lyme disease, anesthesia for dental treatment. That's Cadillac Care, not specifically for children under 5, the severely disabled, and others. So we're talking about some pretty basic stuff. And one question that I have is, so in your proposal, if somebody's single and they don't need the maternity coverage, but then they're going to be married, they're getting married, they expect to have a baby, could they presumably then in the open enrollment period, could then buy the coverage that they're looking for, maternity coverage, or if they have a family member who they're concerned might be alcoholic, they can then at that point get the alcoholism coverage, or so with each of the annual open enrollment periods, they would at that point then be able to expand to the coverage that they would want that would fit their family's needs. Am I accurate in describing it that way? I'm sure, Drazkowski.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto, I envision a health insurance future that wouldn't even require open enrollment periods, wouldn't have the requirements of government forcing us to when we need to make these decisions. We need to think around a different paradigm because things are changing in Congress and some people are reluctant to accept those realities. But we're going to have a different health insurance and health care future ahead of us. And going back to what we have is not always going to be where we're going to go. So we may in the future not have to worry about open enrollment periods that are prescribed by government, but instead have a contract between one or maybe many different options for health insurers and individuals who maybe there won't be requirements around a particular time of year when you have an open enrollment period. Different insurers will be able to offer different options.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm understanding you correctly, if I'm single, when I get married and we're going to have a baby, I can at that point go to an insurance company and say, guess what, I'd like insurance for maternity care, maternity coverage, but presumably the insurance company comes back to me and says, well, it's no longer insurance. You now know you're going to be having a baby, or I'm worried about my family having being alcoholic. At that point, I go and I get the coverage, but it's not coverage anymore. It's not insurance anymore. I'm now paying. I mean, wouldn't the insurance company, they know that I need treatment for alcoholism. They know that I need this. They know that I need that. And then I'm being charged full price. So I'm trying to understand, even under your scenario where people would know in advance what concerns they would have, by the time that they would be getting that care, it's no longer insurance, and it's no longer a risk pool. It's you know that you need it, and they would charge you full price for it. So what am I missing in that analysis?
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto, I think what you're missing is that people will make those decisions about what they believe they need to be insured for. Insurance happens around things that are eventualities that could happen for individuals. For a man that's single to have a child by himself is not an eventuality. For a 60-year-old who's done having kids, to have kids is not an eventuality. For a woman to come across prostate cancer is not an eventuality that she would consider. Those are things that they would make the smart decision for themselves that, you know what, I don't need this coverage or this coverage, but these are things that could eventually happen for me, and these are the things that I would buy coverage for.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you're asking Minnesotans to have you be their, essentially their sort of advisor regarding health insurance. I guess I'm imagining, so if I'm an individual, I'm coming here, I'm saying, I have this concern that I might have, I'm single, I'm going to be getting married. At what point should I be getting coverage for maternity care and for newborn care, et cetera? Do I do that, at the moment that I get married? Do we wait until we find out that my wife is pregnant? Like I'm trying to understand under your scenario, because it seems to me that the way that this works is people are, of course, going to be buying cheaper coverage until and unless they find they need coverage. And then at that point, the insurance company is going to be charging a lot of money for what is at that point no longer insurance. So I guess I'm trying to understand how an individual, when they get into that situation, is supposed to deal with that.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto, you're right. People will have to make decisions instead of government making it for them. What we have now is government forcing that decision on them with this long list of prescribed mandates that they can't afford. And what the future is going to have to require is that people make decisions for themselves. Really kind of a novel idea.
So, Mr. Chair, as has been pointed out repeatedly, of course, people don't know in advance, right? Now, if they do know in advance, then you've got the problem I pointed out that the rates are going to be very high. I understand I can make a decision, but it's hard to do that if I'm being charged far more than I can afford, which this would exacerbate, in my view. But we also have the situation of people who don't know that they're going to be diagnosed with cancer. They don't know what their situation is. So I want to repeat a question Representative Patterson asked you on the House floor earlier, saying someone who has one of these Draskowski care plans, doesn't cover cancer, doesn't cover whatever it is, and ends up being diagnosed with cancer, what happens to that person at that point? I remember you saying on the House floor, you're on your own, was the phrase that I remember, but I may have remembered that wrong. Could you please describe what happens with that person under your view of the world?
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Pinto, so if somebody gets cancer and doesn't have coverage, what happens to them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they will have to pay if you don't have coverage. Or I'd be interested what do we know about pre-existing conditions? The coverage is going to be required by the federal government with pre-existing conditions. We don't know what they're going to say in Congress and what that means. So, anyway.
Mr. Chair, you say people have to pay. So if they can't pay, they have cancer, they don't have coverage, they have one of your plans, they can't afford to pay. I guess let me flip this around and just ask, we have a requirement right now in state law that medical facilities provide emergency treatment for people. So a question for you is, do you favor that? Because, of course, that is what happens, I suppose. Do you favor that being kept? That's important from my understanding in terms of supporting or opposing the bill. Do you favor that mandate still being in place requiring emergency treatment for people who can't pay?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto, all I know is we've got a bunch of people right now that are uninsured because they can't afford the insurance options that are out there for them. And so my question to you would be, what are they going to do?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Drazkowski, thank you for the question. In my view, at the very least, we don't want people dying on the sidewalk outside of hospitals. And I'm willing to say that forthright. There's an ask you again. Do you favor keeping in law the requirement that emergency services be provided by medical facilities people cannot afford to pay? It's a pretty simple question. And it seems like a bedrock commitment in society that at the very least we wouldn't have people die outside of hospitals.
Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, that's not part of this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Pinto, we got a couple more people that want to ask questions here.
And Mr. Chair, so with respect, I'll just say it is extremely part of this bill because under this bill, some people will not have coverage for treatments that for conditions with which they'll be diagnosed. So the question is, if we could get an answer, and I won't delve any further, Mr. Chair, I'll just make a comment and be done. It seems like a pretty simple question to get answered. Do we still support that? If we do, then understood, then at least we've got that backstop to this bill. Then the question is, do we want to have hospitals continue having that requirement and the taxpayers don't pay, in which case we're supporting an unfunded mandate on a private organization? Or do we want to have taxpayers pay, which is what we do right now when somebody can't afford to pay, in which case all these Drazkowski care treatments would be pushing people to what is really socialized medicine. And so my concern is, I really think we need to know in evaluating the answer to this whether or not we will in fact be providing care, all of us, collectively, societally, to people who can't afford to pay. And I'll be done. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lunan.
No, I'll pass.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, what I was going to say is going to be a lot shorter because my colleague covered it. So, but I do want to address one thing. I was going to ask Representative Drazkowski what he thought was unpredictable on this list or what was predictable on this list because most of us, when we're 19 years old, don't plan to get cancer. You know, I'm way past 19, you know, and do I think I'm going to get cancer? I hope I don't, right? But hope isn't healthcare. The one thing I did want to address is you said maternity benefits are predictable. For the thousands of people who have unplanned pregnancies, I would say that it's not. But in addition to that, the notion that men don't need maternity benefits is kind of insulting. It makes me ask how you all ended up on this earth. You all were the beneficiary of maternity care, prenatal care, hospitalization, care by a doctor or a nurse practitioner. It's not just one gender that benefits from maternity care. And you can actually take the maternity coverage a step further and talk about what insurance really means. It's not just about one person. If it was, it would not be affordable. We're talking about sharing risk. And yesterday's entire conversation was about how do we spread the risk better? How do we spread it more broadly so that it's more affordable for everybody to be in the pool? And that's the goal. And so pushing people into plans that, as I've said before, are gambling really serve to only drive up costs through healthcare bankruptcies, drive up costs through uncompensated cares in our hospitals. We've heard a lot of testimony to drive up costs for people who don't get their cancer diagnoses because they don't think they're going to get them when they're going to buy that policy. And so your freedom, Representative Drazkowski, is not a freedom to have affordable insurance. We have really smart ways to get to much more affordable insurance, and there's a lot of people in the legislature that are working on that right now. This is the freedom to be sick, to be alone, to be left out, the freedom to die, the freedom to go broke. And yeah, people can make those choices. They're not good choices for the rest of us. There's almost no part of the economy where we're more tied together than we are in healthcare. Your decisions affect the premiums that I pay and vice versa. So the fact that this is not a one-sided economic argument, that just to make premiums low for some people is a good thing. The effect that that will have in our healthcare economy will be devastating, and we've proven that over the years, and that's why Minnesota has worked so hard to ensure coverage. Minnesota has worked so hard to make sure that we have, worked toward market stability, and Minnesota has worked so hard to make sure that everybody has access to healthcare. Those are the values that Minnesotans want, and I will tell you right now, when you talk about support for this bill, I don't know who else's inbox is blowing up, but mine is. People don't like this, and not only do they not like it, it frightens them. Minnesotans are in a place where they're looking for more security in the healthcare system, and they're seeing this as a direct attack on their ability to be secure in the healthcare system. Those of us who have gone before, who have gotten that diagnosis, who understand what it means to make sure that we have healthcare coverage, can tell those folks that might get sold a plan like this, and I don't even know if these plans would be offered. I'd be surprised, but this is going to be financially devastating to individuals and to our state economy. So, in case you're wondering, I'm not supporting your bill.
Representative Halverson, nice job with your comments. And with that, Representative Lunan, are you sure? You passed?
Yeah.
Okay. With that, Representative Drazkowski, we'll give you the final word. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Rosenthal. My apologies.
No, you'll never be forgiven, Mr. Chair. No. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, just to follow up on Representative Pinto's comments, the way I read this, it not only makes healthcare so much more expensive for everybody else, but it makes people that can't afford it go bankrupt first, maybe die, and then the hospital has to pick up costs if they don't. So you're really blowing up the system and making it far, far more expensive. I mean, people should see a primary doctor and not end up in the emergency room. That should be our focus. Here you're picking winners and losers. We're going to have people that die because of this. We're going to have people that, how can you predict when you're going to get sick and what illness you're going to get? You can't. At least I can't. And to me, this is an assault on something that I think we all, as citizens of this state, deserve, and that's quality health care. And my phone has been ringing off the hook. And I just don't understand why you think this is going to make things cheaper. And, you know, your example about, males shouldn't pay for reproductive health or babies being delivered, I think is absurd. We pay property taxes for kids to go to school. Some people don't have kids in school, but yet they pay taxes. Should I decide that I don't want to pay taxes for schools, or I don't want to accept fire service if it comes to my house? I don't want to accept police service if I need it? I just don't understand where you're going with this, and I think it's really, really frightening and a really bad precedent for the state.
Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With all this excitement, I think Representative Drazkowski should get to know how his colleagues feel about this bill, so I request a roll call.
Did you want to, Representative Slocum, did you have you had your microphone down earlier? You're good? Okay. Representative Drazkowski will give you the final word.
Is the bill moving on, or is the bill being laid over?
My original motion was to HHS reform. Representative Slocum made a suggestion. We changed the motion to HHS finance. And I think what we're going to wind up doing is laying this bill over and keeping it for possible inclusion in a future reform bill that we have coming out of the committee.
So in all due respect, I mean, I'm fine voting, but if we're laying it over, is it still a votable motion?
Well, I was going to give Representative Drazkowski the final word, and then I was going to speak to that. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you for the discussion, members. You know, this is an option for us to provide some freedom for the future of our health care system here in Minnesota. You know, the individual mandate's going to go away. And people aren't going to be even required to buy health insurance. So Representative Pinto and others, it's going away. And we got to have something that's going to work when we have that gone. And so when the individual mandate's gone, we at least need to have insurance that people can afford. Those people who may be considering not buying health insurance when the individual mandate's gone need to have an affordable option. It doesn't even exist now when that mandate is over their head with a sledgehammer of a $2,000 fine. So the question is, are we going to trust individuals and give them the ability and freedom to decide their health care future, or are we only going to continue to allow health plans to be offered at the mandate of government? So that's the question. And Mr. Chair and members, this offers a health care future that provides freedom for people to choose, that doesn't force women to buy prostate cancer coverage, that doesn't prescribe and require grandparents to have newborn child coverage. So, Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate your support on the bill.
Representative Drazkowski, thank you for bringing a bill to us that has been maybe the liveliest discussion of the year. There have been a lot of good points raised from people on both sides of the aisle. And with that, as we discussed, I am going to change my motion, and House File 2026 will be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus reform bill. Thank you very much, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Lunan, House File 1046.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 1046, and we have a A1 amendment. Ask the committee to consider first.
Representative Lunan moves House File 1046, and the motion is to send it to the General Register, and he moves the A1 amendment. Those in favor of the adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you, members. The A1 is adopted. Representative Lunan, to your bill.
So I'm assuming Ms. Beaver isn't going to testify on my bill. There she goes. Okay, so the this bill is deals with the Minnesota Joint Underwriting Association. And just to give you a quick background, I'll be very brief. What it was is a risk pool, basically, for liquor liability exposures that were not able to get liability insurance because of some aspect of their business. Yet they were required to have insurance to get their liquor license. So the state of Minnesota set up a risk pool, if you will, with higher premiums, of course, that were funded by the premium that the establishments paid. And if the claims went over what the premiums collected were, members, which would be the insurance companies writing these coverages, would then have to kick in immediately. This was an accessible policy. Several decades later, we came across the same exposure with group homes and rehab centers and things of those nature, some of which might have been those same bars. Okay, Mr. Chairman, that was a joke.
No, we got it.
Okay. Had a hard time getting coverage. And so what we're doing is they set up a separate board. What this is simply a consolidation of those two governmental units to try to realize the reality that the marketability of the two products is basically the same. It's just underwritten a little different. And create a consolidated board of not five members on for each one, but a total of just seven for the one. I'll stand any questions.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. Members, any questions? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to underscore Representative Lunan's point that marketability is extremely important.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Hillstrom.
This is a question, Mr. Chair, to the author. Does this have any impact on any of the dram shop liability or any of those other issues that we might see?
Representative Lunan.
No, ma'am. This is the dram shop laws all stay in place, if I understand your question correctly. This is just simply a provider of coverage that would go through and end up indemnifying for any liability that the liquor store, or it's usually a bar, would incur on this. So I guess I would answer that no.
Representative Hillstrom?
I'll just wait and see if there's any other testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other testifiers? Is there anyone else that wants to speak for or against the bill? Not seeing anybody. Representative Hillstrom? Members, other questions? Representative Lunan, we'll give you the final word.
I want to thank you for hearing the bill and appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. With that, Representative Lunan renews his motion that House File 1046, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is passed and sent to the General Register. Thank you, members. Members, with that, we are adjourned.